Welcome to a very special K-Rock Football podcast, and talking about great premiership eras, there's probably one that hasn't been unmatched in the history of Geelong football, and that was the North Shore Football Club from 1974 to 2000 when they won 14 premierships in 27 seasons. This weekend, Saturday at Windsor Park, they're going to mark three of them a few months later than they would have hoped. Unfortunately, COVID got in the way of the 40, 30 and 20-year reunions of the 1980, 1990 and 2000 premiership teams. But I've been lucky enough, and I've got football royalty here at K-Rock. The three coaches of those sides in the great Gordon Hines, John Albin and Glenn Keast have joined me at K-Rock. Gentlemen, welcome to you. Fantastic to have you all both, all three of you here, and really appreciate you giving us some of your time.
No problem.
Firstly, let's just touch on the health of a couple of you. Gordon, your battles over the last couple of years have been well documented in the Geelong Advertiser, but I understand fighting fit and almost back to playing weight.
A couple of kilos down, probably about 5 or 6 kilos down on weight, but I don't think that's ever going to come back. I think it might have been because of age creeping on and so forth. But yeah, the rest of it's, I've been given the all clear, and hopefully that it doesn't return, and they're pretty confident that it won't because of the extra maintenance program I went through. It was another 12-month program on top of the ordinary treatment. And I'll go back every 3 months, and if it does fire up, that treatment should knock it over straight away.
You had a great reputation for being one of the fittest men in local football, and you continued that fitness regime post-career. Do you think that held you in good stead in the battle that you had?
Well, that's what the specialists are saying. When they said that, even before I started the treatment, that when they did the tests on fitness and all that kind of stuff, that it would be a lot easier for me to get through it, providing that I stopped doing what I was doing and let the chemo, because I needed all the energy to fight the cancer itself and put up with the treatment of chemo and radiotherapy and stuff like that. So that was a bit of a problem for me because I couldn't adjust to that. But I made a promise to the people that were looking after me that I would do that. And yeah, so I did, and everything worked pretty well after that. Yeah.
When I rang a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to your partner, Diane, and she said you were down the back of the paddock chopping wood, so you must be going all right at 76.
Oh, well, yeah, I've been doing that for quite a while. Yeah, that's where I run into all the trouble when I was cutting the wood, you know, and I had a couple of blackouts, and I was getting pain in the chest, and I hadn't been to a doctor for a couple of years because Kevin Telfer was my doctor, and he'd retired, and so it was a couple of years since I'd been, and then Diane suggested that I go and see her doctor, and which I did, and he sent me for an MRI, and he said, when you have that, I want you to come straight back to me and I'll give you the results. And I did, and the results weren't what I wanted, you know, and stuff like that. So he sent me to a specialist, Dr. David Routledge, you know, and they did all the tests then, and they put me through all the fitness stuff and so forth and whatever, and said, this is what you've got to do, and if you do it, you'll come through it, but if you don't abide by what I say, well, you're going to struggle. Yep. With the energy side of it and so forth. So yeah, and I did all that, and it was quite good.
Yep. You know. John, when you hear that the man that you've played under and, you know, watched be so tough on the footy field has this battle, how did you react, and I suppose your contact with Gordon through that time?
Oh, I didn't really see him because he's living up the bush and he's a pretty private bloke. He wouldn't have wanted anybody to sort of go and see him anyway, but I just said to my wife and a few people, I said, if anybody can beat it, Gordon would, because of his determination.
Keasty, your battles have been well documented. I believe you finally got to celebrate your 50th birthday.
Yeah, we had a bit of a party last weekend, a bit of a 100th celebration, so yeah, that was good. Yeah. A lot of fun.
Because better half 50 as well?
She turns 50 this year, so we were always planning on doing a 100th celebration sort of split between our birthdays, but COVID sort of put a stop to that. But yeah, we thought we'd do it, get it out of the way before footy started.
Yep. Check-ups, do you still have to be in contact with the cardiologist and the like?
Yeah, so 12 months from December was the last time I went back in December. He didn't want to see me for another 12. So, so that's, yeah, pretty good.
You're back to fighting weight as well?
Maybe not quite fighting weight, but good enough, I think.
Well, obviously, great to see all three of you here, and good to see both you, Hinesy and Keisty, in good health. But let's talk football. The era, obviously, Gordon, you came to North Shore in 1973 to a club that had been shown glimpses of talent but hadn't been able to put it together, and you became the man that put it together, and you had this stunning run through the 1970s and early 1980s. But you were coming into 1980 off consecutive grand final losses. You lost the last GDFL Division 1 Evelyn Hurst grand final to Newtown in 1978, and then your arch rival St Mary's got you in 1979. But there was also some changes too to your lineup. Leo King went to the Cats, your star ruckman, and your leading goal kicker in Rod Aylmer, obviously, who we lost last year, the weapon, is now departed as well. He's gone to Geelong West. Talk to us about going into 1980. What are your memories of going into the season with a slightly different looking lineup to 1979?
Well, we'd been in pretty good nick for a couple of years, and we followed up 77, 76, and finished up in both those grand finals, 78, 79. And I think at the time that we'd been winning second semi-finals pretty easily, and by fair margins and so forth and whatever, and maybe we got a little bit complacent, and I started to think to myself that whether it was good to win the second semi, because I know it's good to get that break, a week's break and whatever, and we used to always have a practice match anyway amongst ourselves, but I just often wonder whether they switch off because of that second semi, and I was starting to think, well, maybe we shouldn't win the second semi. We should just keep playing through. And I started to believe in that you play weekly, every week, and you keep your condition and so forth and whatever. But it was a bit of a shock in 79, because we'd won the final pretty easily, and then go into the grand final, and we lost a couple by a small margin, yep, and so forth and whatever. So going into 80, we played a lot of different players. We had eight different players in the side from 79 to 80, and I think that might have helped us to turn it around a bit. And a lot of the players were younger players. They played in reserve championship and premierships in there, and under 18s and so forth. So I thought, well, we didn't deliberately get rid of players or anything like that. We just filled the players through the seniors and whatever. And then, when we come into that final series, we were pretty consistent about what we were doing, and we had the Aylmer boys, who were kicking a lot of goals. They both kicked 100 goals in 79.
Yep.
And then coming up, and they switched places then. Rod became the second player and Ross became the senior player. Yep. Yeah, so that might have helped us a little bit too, because Ross was one of those players that wanted to kick trick goals and all that, and it used to drive me crazy watching him train and dribbling along the ground and all that sort of stuff that he could do. But he was a pretty smart player with it. A bit slow, but pretty smart with it.
Yep.
And Rod had kicked 100 goals too, so there was a bit of competition there that sort of lifted, I reckon, Ross a bit to pull his self together and get up there and do something about it. And yep, he did, yeah.
So you won the second semi-final against St Mary's by 97 points in 1980, and you talked about those easy second semi-final wins. Did then that complacency that you've worried about from previous years, did that come back into your mind that, gee, we've won this by the best part of 100 points and we'll go in as red-hot favourites? Did that concern you?
Yeah, it did, but not a great deal. You know, I was always dubious about St Mary's, because they were one of the clubs that would pick up all the players from West Geelong and they'd pay good money to them and stuff like that. And the rest of the league was just ordinary payment players and stuff like that. And So you always knew that yourself that they'll play a trick on you or try and play a trick on you, St Mary's, and back away in one game.
Gee, Casey's and, listening to this with his ears wide open.
and then to come and have a whack at you. You know, and I think that's what happened. You know, we got a... Not complacent, but I think the win was probably too big for us.
Yep.
Yeah, too big.
Yep. So that year, you went 17-1 through the home and away season. I think Barwon were the only team to beat you. They got you early in the year. Yeah. But you were on some sort of incredible run through the season. I think you won 15 straight going into the grand final. John, you played in that grand final. Yeah. There's a great team photo from that year. That do you wish you had your time back, that you hadn't pulled that face in that 1980 Premiership photo?
I don't know. I can't even remember getting the photo, but I don't know what happened. not the best photo I've ever seen.
What are your memories of going into the 80 grand final off such a big win?
I think what Gordon said, if you win by 90 points in the second semi, you're pretty confident going into the grand final. And as it turned out, it was a real struggle. It was a good game, but... we ended up getting over the line, and that's the main thing.
Yep. 14-11, 95, St Mary's 13-7, 85. Are your memories still vivid of grand final day, Gordon? Of that grand final?
Yeah, reasonably.
Yep. Yeah. What do you remember? What sticks out from that day?
We're more consistent about what we're doing. You know, we've had a lot of good players that have played a lot of games in North Shore, you know, and a lot of them have played 100 games in the reserves to get into the seniors because of the consistency of the players and stuff like that. We didn't have as many class players. We had more in the working man's class, I suppose you could put it. You know, I think that evened us out across the ground, right across the ground, and we knew that. Yeah, we were somewhere back to where we should be. Yeah.
How did young Alban perform on the day?
He was just a grand final, well, not only a grand final, but a final specialist. You know, he thrived on that, on playing in finals like that. And you know, he probably, in my mind, would be the greatest player ever to play finals on a consistent base in 10, 12 years of football. I can't remember. And he played against some great players. Centre forwards of GFL in those days were really powerful people.
Yep.
And like Kelly and blokes like that, you know, Vocal and like tough players. And he would just stand above the others. And you could see as soon as he got onto the ground, he looked like something caged up and was just wanted to pull the bars apart and get into it, you know, and he did. That's the way he played, and I can never ever remember him getting beat I can't remember him getting beat too often, really. Yeah, if he ever played an ordinary game, it was against North Shore when they were in the competition. Yep. And he hated playing at Osmond Park. And he just couldn't wind himself up the play because he didn't like Osmond Park. So, yeah, he made it awkward for the rest of us. And I said to him, I said, it's the best ground in the league to play on Osmond Yep. Park. But that was the only place. Everywhere else, yeah, he was just a great player.
Why didn't you like Osmond Park, John?
Probably the opposition a bit. Like, we always seem to beat them pretty easy. And, I don't know, you daydream a bit and I... Never played well there. Just get in your head, you're not going to play well there, and that was it, I think.
So 1980, you went on and went back-to-back in 1981, beat Newtown and Chewell, and then in 83, you win another flag, and the Hines era comes to an end at the end of 84. Like, you came back for one season in the early 90s, is that right, Gordon? About 92?
Yeah.
Had a season between John and Ron Watt?
Yeah, that's right.
So we move forward to 1990, and... North Shore haven't won a flag for 7 years. So after all that success in that decade from 74 to 83, I think you've been to one grand final. Newtown might have got you in the mid-80s in one of their back-to-backs, John.
Yep.
You get to 1990, but it was an even season. It was a year where you went 14-4. It was probably a season you look at North Shore and go, 14-4, that's probably an off-season for them. And you had a run mid-season where you lost four games in six rounds and you just started a little bit. Can you take us back to the middle of 1990 and your memories of just how it just didn't seem to be I suppose, clicking for your boys?
Yeah, we just weren't playing that well. We were getting over the sides we should have been, and we were beating the top sides, but we couldn't beat the middle of the road sides for some reason or other. And so we stepped up training a bit and started training three nights a week towards the finals, and things started to come a little bit better.
So Bell Park, Lara, Grovedale and Newtown all got you in that little run. You said when we came in that you go, oh God, I've got to remember back 30 years, but it seems to be coming back to you. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah.
Just little...
I remember the...
poke the memory.
I remember the finals, like the second semi, we played absolutely terrible and we only got beat by 6 points, so that gives us a lot of confidence for the grand final, I suppose. Here we got over St Joey's the following week.
Yep. So you lost the second semi to St Mary's, and I think you trailed Joey's by 3 goals at halftime in the prelim.
Yeah, that's right.
Your memories of halftime in that game?
Oh, well, they needed a bit of a rev up, and we just weren't playing well. We were a running side. We weren't a tall side that year. We had Paul Keating, and that was about the biggest bloke we had, and everybody was just doing their own thing, so we had a bit of a talk about it halftime, started running, and things started clicking, and I think we overrun them pretty easy in the end, didn't we?
Yeah, might have won by 5 goals in the end. Yeah. But you found yourself in the grand final. I think it was a pretty nice, from memory, 1990 was a pretty nice day.
Yeah, it was a nice day.
At West Oval.
Yeah.
27 points down. Cam Loftus kicked a goal, I think, and gave him a 4.5-goal lead. About 18 minutes into the third quarter, and you find yourself on the back foot. How does a team go from... when you're 27 points down in the grand final, you're probably not winning it, other than if you're North Shore of that era. Can you take us through what happened from there?
I think we were a lot fitter than they were. And you could just see, even though they kicked away, Kane Purcell kicked a magnificent goal. He was only a 16-year-old kid. He's kicked a goal and everybody just lifted, and we kicked another couple before three-quarter time. And the last quarter, we were running all over and we just couldn't put it on the board.
So you brought Kane in.
Yeah.
And you're right, he's a kid, 16 years old, and you bring him into the toughest country competition in the state. We knew he was a prodigy, but the decision to bring Kane into the side, talk to us about that.
Well, he was dominating the under-18 comp. He'd had two people playing on him all day, like tagging him, and he was only 16 playing under-18s, which was a good effort anyway. And we just thought, I had a chat to his old man. I said, I want to give him a go on the seniors. I reckon he's good enough. His old man said, go for it. So we put him in, and he never looked back.
Yep. No, Dale Purcell in the grand final. Dale still, I think, to this... I think Dale might not turn up on Saturday. He's still filthy on himself for not being part of that premiership side.
Yeah, well, he got reported, and then Johnny Burns done his leg, so he missed out too.
Yep. Russell Campbell, best on ground in the grand final.
He played very well. Him, Gavin Orr, a lot of the blokes that probably wouldn't spring to mind straight away all had good games.
Yep. Stormy was your captain?
Yeah, Stormy at fullback, back flank.
Yep.
He won multiple best and fairest back there. He was a great player, Stormy.
Yeah, I think, does he get underrated a little bit, Stormy?
Oh, I think he does. I think he won about 3 best and fairest.
He then went on to Port and took them to a premiership, and then took Bannockburn to a couple of flags in the late 90s as well. And back at North Shore, from what I understand, I think Windy and Nick Dixon have been able to get him back involved, which is fantastic. There was some talk that you might have been floating around helping out, John. Is that correct?
No, I just go over and watch training and that.
No.
I'm always over there, but I don't have a hand in anything.
Just keep a keen eye on it?
Yeah, that's it.
Is 1990, you played in numerous flags, I think six or seven. Does 1990 rank as one of the better ones for, I suppose, what you had to go through in terms of lose a second semi, battle through a prelim, and be, you know, then be 4.5 goals down in the decider?
Yeah, it's always nice to beat St Mary's, because we've had a rivalry through the 70s and 80s and in the 90s as well. And being behind by that much, like I said, it's pretty hard to come back, but the way they did it was really good. They were full of run at the end of the game, and St Mary's had just stopped all walk, and they had a good side, St Mary's, so it was good to get over them.
Yep.
And to break that 7-year drought was pretty good too.
Yep. Did you play your 300th in 1990?
Yeah, I did.
You played it in the twos, is that correct?
Yeah, I'd retired in 89 on 298 games, I think. I was just coaching and I was doing all the training and everything. People were saying, why don't you play your 300th and that, so I did.
Yep. And you and Bob Jane, I think, still the only 300 game players
in
the club?
No, there's half a dozen now.
There's a few more?
Yeah. A lot of people stick around the club, so it's good.
Nah, good. Let's move on to 2000. We talk about eras of dominance and we talk about the 14 flags in 27 seasons, but seven of them came in a rush from 1993 through to 2000. And, of course, Ron Watt, 93, 96, 97 in charge, 95 as well. And then, Keastie, you take over, and I would describe that what you got given was the keys to the Ferrari. The only thing you could do was crash it, but you made sure that you kept it on the track for at least another 3 years. Is that a way to describe being handed the coaching role at North Shore in 1998?
Yeah, look, it's it was one I suppose you look back on now, and I was took over a pretty decent side. Didn't need to do a lot. I think they actually nicknamed me Humphrey B. Bear through that year because they said anyone Humphrey B. Bear could coach that side. But we certainly had a great side, and we kept most of the list from 97 and added a couple to it. So we 98 we went through obviously undefeated, and no one's done it since. So I must have done something right in that year.
Yep. The 2000 year was an interesting one. It was the Olympic year. And you guys, your finals actually came post the AFL season finishing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
So you played and it was a bit later finish. I think you might have finished about September 30 or something like that. I remember the day as being starting really nice. The under-18s and the reserves were played through good conditions. But then the weather turned.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it turned, I think, either just before or just after three-quarter time. So it was quite windy. And then it actually bucketed down rain in the last quarter, and even through the presentations, it was pretty hairy, I think.
Yep. You're going for six straight. No club's won six straight in the region since the great North Geelong side, and Gordon will appreciate this, of the late 40s and early 50s, it won seven straight in the Evelyn Hurst. Was it something you play on that, gee, you know, we can keep creating history, or do you just look at each flag, each grand final in isolation and go, well, it's just another one we add to the collection?
Yeah, it's probably, you look back on it now and probably it was bigger than you perhaps appreciated at the time. But at the time, you were just really in the moment and playing to win that year. And, you know, we'd had a pretty tough second semi against Lara and sort of scraped through. So we had to be on our game to win that year. So, you didn't sort of compartmentalise it to a block of premierships. It was just more that single year you were focused on.
Yep. Unlike 1980 and 1990, which was top four, you guys were top five by this stage in the GFL, and you finished second. You had to go through the qualifying final against South Bar, and as you said, get over the top of Lara. But Lara had you measure in a game during the year. They gave you a bit of a touch-up during the season, didn't they?
Yeah, it was probably a bit what John said before. We sort of got we got beaten, I think it was at Windsor Park, by Lara, and they gave us a good touch-up sort of about round 14 or 15, something.
Yeah, round 14.
14, was it?
Yeah.
And it really just sort of sharpened our focus up because we'd obviously played in a few premierships in a row or grand finals in a row, and we knew we needed to build our season, so it was sort of a great sort of sharpener up in terms of that performance. And we did the extras, and we'd do different things through the week to make sure that by the time we got to finals we were ready to go. And even at that stage, transferring from local grounds onto the big ground, because the second year we'd done that, we realised that we needed to be super fit to play on KP.
Yep. South Barn got you in round 20, didn't they? So you had them in back-to-back weeks before then playing them in the qualifying. Yep. That round 20 game, did you sort of know, because you knew, I think you couldn't finish top, you were only going to finish second no matter
correct.
What.
Yeah.
Did you sort of just take the foot off the pedal a bit in terms of selection or anything like that?
We did a few things that, you know, you weren't not trying to win, but you certainly had an eye for the future.
Yep.
In terms of the next few weeks.
Yep. And you got South Bar on the following week and got past them pretty comfortably in the end, from memory.
Yeah, I think so. I think we certainly learnt a lot in that last home and away game and knew what we needed to do in the finals.
Yep. Grand final day, as we've talked about, the weather did a bit of a 180 on itself and was horrible for a good part of it. But what are your memories of that grand final?
As I said, we'd sort of grinded to a win in the final to get into the granny. And we certainly, I think, Lara, a really good side. We had Frank, who was obviously probably at the peak of his powers. Mick Atkins, you know, so we had a really good midfield. We just wanted to back our strength through there. Frank had actually played on Troy Mitchell in the previous final, yep. So sort of, I won't say tagged him, but ran with him a bit, and we flipped that around, and I took that job in the granny, and we let Frank sort of run loose and, you know, play his freewheeling game. So we sort of set a bit of a signal to, I think Lara probably thought that we'd run with the same plan, but we changed it up, which I think is important when you go into a grand final. You've got a few things up your sleeve that you think can work and you can, you know, pull over the opposition. But
did you also target Troy because he was coaching as well, and you just give him that extra something to think about?
Yeah, I think so. Like, he was just such a great inside sort of, you know, mid, and he sort of started. If he could get his hands on the footy, then they'd sort of, their running players at Ballins and guys like that would certainly benefit from it. So we certainly wanted to make sure he didn't influence the game, and I sort of played that role with my brother, and we sort of tag-teamed him, I suppose.
Yep. There was no love lost between North Shore and Lara either, was there?
No, they were probably, in that era, probably the sort of greatest rival we had. We had obviously a few, but certainly the northern suburbs, they were big games, and Lara had been pretty strong, you know, from about mid-90s as well. We got him in 95, and so they were big games back in the day.
Mick was best on ground?
Yeah, Mick was super. Like, he was just the, you know, consummate professional. 6 or 8 weeks out, he'd sort of stop cutting up the fish down at Gilligan's and train sort of 5 or 6 days a week. So he'd sharpen himself up, and his fitness and that would be, you know, supreme by the time he got to finals. And, you know, he's couple of grand finals, I think 99 and 2000, where he started in the middle, even 98, he was as good as anyone going around.
I can't find a full team. Did Shane play in 2000? John?
2001,
the losing one to South Barwon.
Yeah.
Yep, okay. Wasn't sure whether he was... I can't find a full side, the 20 or the 21 from that era. John, how did you, I suppose, post-coaching and post-retirement, you know, you're standing there at Windsor Park every second Saturday, view such a wonderful run, and you must have felt blessed as a past player to see the legacy continued on by Killer and Keasty.
Oh, it was great. It was really good. Like, you look forward to going to footy every Saturday, but you know you've got a fair chance of winning. Yep. So we had some great players to watch, and I joined the committee, and that was good.
Yep. Would have been hard. The 70s side to the side, you know, in the 80s to the sides of the 90s, it would be very hard to, you know, so many great players and pitting them together. Gordon, did you get to watch a lot of that 90s era as well?
Yeah, I sort of used to go to training when John was coaching and have a bit of a look what was going on and how they were doing it and stuff like that, and go and watch him on the Saturdays and that, and yeah, he was pretty spot on what he was doing and stuff like that, and I think the image of the club in itself was enough to say, well, if you don't do the right thing around the place here, you're not going to last very long and stuff like that. So I think that went right through the club for 30 odd years. You know, once it was planted, the seed was planted, well, you dare step out of line and stuff like that. So, and the whole time I've seen there, I thought he did a great job, you know, because he was up against it there for a while, you know, and really put everything back into place and then give the club another chance to have a go when Ron and Glenn come in.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's what happened. Yep.
John, how much of your coaching style was modelled on what you'd learnt from playing under Gordon?
I'd be 5/6 of it, I reckon.
Yep.
Like, Gordon always had the philosophy, the harder you train, the better you play, and you do anything to win, and that's sort of what I took in.
Yep. The camaraderie of that North Shore era and having been out there as a young fella and watched games and stood on the sideline and just got that sense of real, you know, one massive family. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Boy, we've done everything together, and that's the secret, I think. If you have a barbecue, everybody's invited, and we had great club dues and everything. The hardest bit for me was when I started coaching, I wasn't allowed to have a beer with all the boys and that, because I had to keep a little bit distance, and that was very hard to do, but made up for it at the end of the year.
Was that the toughest 4 years of your life?
Yeah, probably.
Keisty, you coach against North Shore now. Do you get fond memories when you go out to Windsor Park? And, you know, do you find yourself maybe going to that part of the ground is where I did this? Or, you know, Tommy Hall took a mark here, or Simon Riddock came up with a good spoil there or something like that?
Yeah, we actually haven't played a proper game at North Shore since I've been at St Mary's. So we played a Praco out there a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And we actually trained out there about 3 weeks ago on a Saturday morning. The club were great and let us use the ground. So, yeah, probably did reminisce a bit that morning out there on the Oval, looking back over the pavilion and things. And a lot of things haven't changed too much. But, yeah, certainly some amazing memories, that's for sure.
The Gordon Hines Pavilion, of course, that overlooks Windsor Park. Do you like going and seeing your name on the top of a grandstand, Gordon? I know you're a fairly humble man, but I suspect it probably doesn't sit overly comfortably with you.
Well, the way I thought about it when it was mentioned to me about what was going to happen and so forth and whatever, I was against it for the simple reason that the people that were involved, the players and so forth, they're the ones that should have the name up there. So therefore it should be a name that combines all those people together. But the unfortunate part about it was that I didn't have a say in it. They just put me to one side and more or less said that, you know, we're the ones that are doing the voting and suggestion and all this sort of caper. And so just leave it to us.
Yep.
But, yeah, like I said, it's a great honour, you know, to have it up there. And different ones say about it, you know, why did you get it and how good it looks and all that sort of thing. Well, I'll never forget that, you know.
You look on now and see North Shore is not what it used to be, Gordon and John. Gordon, you're a bit removed from it living down in the bush, but no doubt you keep a close eye on it. How do you reconcile your thoughts about the club right now when it's, you know, probably going through its toughest ever era?
Well, I look back to 72 when the club finished on the bottom of the ladder and when we took over in 73, how we went about it, and the club was rock bottom at the time. Financially, they weren't too well off. They had players, but the players, to my mind, weren't doing what you should be doing.
Yep.
to play GFL football. So I look at that with the team now, or the club now, and I keep saying to myself, well, if you approach it in a similar line and say to yourself, well, get off backsides now, we're in desperate trouble, and they are in desperate trouble because it wouldn't take much for the council, if they don't do something about performance in general across the place, that they would close that place up.
Yep.
And that would be just absolute criminal to see that happen. Yeah. So my thoughts are that go back to 72 and think about 72, what happened, and preach that to them. And then what happened in 73, how things started to change around, and a lot of people weren't happy on the no train, no play, no drinking and all this sort of crap and whatever. But once that's embedded in your system, you no longer think about it. You just automatically do it. And it was because of the great effort from the players to accept that. And that's the thing they've got to do. They've got to accept that this is what's got to happen for you to get back into power again. Now, if they don't do it, then it won't happen. But in John's days, when he was only a junior, and most of the players were juniors in that time, they accepted that, but they didn't like it, but eventually they did like it. Once you start winning, and when we won the 74 grand final, I never ever seen so many people so excited, and the difference that made the players, their attitude, their outlook, they become mature people. and adults they were. They weren't kids anymore. They were adults, and they just led by example. And then if a player missed training or was late for training, and we trained every Sunday, and if you were a minute late, you had to do the pub run, then you had to do the Telegraph Bridge run, you had to do all that after it all and stuff like that. It sunk in, yeah. Stuff like that. So the players would be, somebody would roll in there about 1 minute to 10 or something like that, and we saw dust going everywhere in the car to jump out of the car and get on the ground by 10 o'clock. Yeah, and the players would be cheering away, and then they'd form, if you had a go, they'd form a guard of honour or go and get your runners for you and all this sort of thing. And it's just formed a great camaraderie around the place. And I think that if they can get something like that going, and they've got people there, Billy Dixon and Dave McDonald and all these blokes there, Greg Dennis and whatever, they're all tied up with the club now. Well, they're the ones that have got to set it. And the reunion next Saturday is the most important thing to happen to that club for a long while. I know it's not a proper reunion, but the importance is that you get all the 80 side there, you get all the 90 side there, and you get all the 2000 players there, and then get North Shore players now who are training, get them to turn up that day, yep, and have a look at it and see what these people look like and how they demonstrate it, what they did and so forth, and then I believe the club will liven up again. But if they don't, I can see a lot of problems there.
Yep. John, how tough a watch has the last 10 to 15 years been? I think 2004 was the sort of the last, yeah, real hurrah at having a crack at a flag.
Yeah, I haven't missed a lot of games. It does get hard, but you've still got good people at the club, and I reckon with the appointments this year and that, we're going to turn it around pretty quick. Training's been really, really good this pre-season. We're getting good numbers and we're getting a few quality players into the club. I know it's going to take time. You're not going to do it in 1 year. Yep. But if we can get these people to stick around. See, the juniors are the hardest thing. We haven't got a lot of juniors out there now because it's an old area and that. Yep. We've got to try and get some juniors from somewhere to start bringing them up.
Yep. Keasty, could you ever envisaged through that late 90s, early 2000s period that this would happen? Hindsight's 2020, but did anybody sort of foresee that, oh, gee, hang on, their population demographics changing and the kids aren't there like they used to be?
Oh, you could see it. Like, you could see it coming a way off. When I started, we used to have the Little League on a Sunday and we'd have to do a roster on umpiring the Little League, and there was lots of kids running around, and then probably from, you know, that was the start, and then by the time I'd finished, there was none of that. So, it's probably one of the things that I was a bit disappointed with the club when I finished up, was just I could see that we had to stay strong to be strong. So bottoming out wasn't really an option, but because, you know, it was just going to be hard to then get players to recruit to the club and so forth. So, I think what John just said before, I think the club have got some great people back involved at the moment, and I know they're really determined to turn things around, and you can certainly see the shoots there that are coming through and some good recruits. So, you know, it's just a matter of hard work. So the guys are up for it. So it's I think they're on the right path.
Yeah. John, Gordon mentioned about either the pub run or the Telegraph run. Did you ever have to do it?
No.
No?
Never.
Was there somebody who was a regular, though, that had to do it?
Oh, there would have been a few over the years. Glenn Murphy, he wouldn't get home that night and just turn up at training, and he's out gear. And there's a lot of blokes like that. But everybody knew you had to be there by 10. And yeah, it was good when somebody turned up late, because like Gordon said, you could get into them for the rest of the week. Well, Gordon used to go running with them to make sure they'd done it. So.
We had 1 year, Kingy, where it was finals, and young Frank Foppiani didn't arrive at 10 o'clock, and so we certainly sent Dave McDonald around to get him out of bed to make sure he could get there to at least do the pub run, because, that way he could play the next week, because if he hadn't have run it up, then there would have been no train, no play.
So out if Foppiani.
We sort of just hinted to Dave Mack to go and grab him out of bed and get him to training. So, that was probably about our funniest moment with that. But it's certainly that culture, and as Gordon described, stayed through the 90s, and we were able to continue that sort of on, and that discipline I think was really important part of that success that we managed to have was the underlying sort of theme of discipline was something that, that sort of stayed through that whole period.
Yep. Gordon, you're going on Saturday, I believe. You'll be at the reunion.
Yep.
Who are you most looking forward to catching up with? Who's somebody you haven't seen for a while? And obviously COVID has changed the way we live our lives, and being able to just casually catch up with people was something we lost there for a while. But there a player or players that you haven't seen that you're really looking forward to shaking hands and having a quiet one with?
The Lot.
The Lot?
Yep.
Simple as that. Is there anybody you haven't seen for a while, though?
Yeah, Darryl Julian.
Yep.
I haven't seen him since he left North Shore, so it's quite a while ago.
Yep.
Yeah, I suppose something like that. But I just like everybody there, you know, nobody stands out. Like, as I said, this bloke stands out as a player, centre back and stuff like that. Yeah. I can mention that, but I can't have it in my own mind that I should have a player that I like better than somebody else or would rather not see I'm busting to see or something like that. I just like to just keep it all level. On the one line, and that's the way I coach. Everything's the same. Everybody the same. Yep. Same penalties. Same rewards for everybody. Yeah.
Are the majority of the 80 boys still with us? Obviously, we lost Rod Aylmer, but he didn't play in 80.
Yeah.
But are the other 19 players in that lineup still here?
Yeah.
Yep. Your 90 boys, John, are they all still with us?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Anybody you haven't seen for a while that you? We'll catch up with Saturday.
I see a lot of them, but like I don't. It's something premiership sides is something not a lot of people get to do. So you just celebrate it with everybody. I reckon.
Yep.
And I'm pretty good at that.
That'd be a bit of fun on Saturday.
Yeah.
Keasty, any of the 2000 boys you haven't seen for a while?
No, I suppose we're a bit lucky. Being a bit younger, but certainly most of the guys are still around. We lost Troy Elzinger. 18 months ago, so that was pretty sad for him to pass on. But certainly those sort of moments make you appreciate, you know, the fact that what happened 20 years ago, and you know, you enjoy the time when you do catch up with people because you never know what's ahead of you, I suppose. Yeah. So.
I suspect there'll be a few boys that haven't seen you since late May last year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
I think you're going to be working. You could probably just stand in the one spot and people will come to your left, right, and centre for a chat.
Oh no, I think it's one of those you go to those reunions and there's just lots of people you haven't seen for a long time. So they'd be great days.
Right. Gentlemen, I want to wrap this up by saying thank you so much. To have Geelong footballing royalty sit in front of me is an absolute thrill and an honour, and that you all agreed on a public holiday to come and give up some of your time. And Gordon, I know you're coming up to Geelong with your partner Diane to see your family, but for you to stay around and give us the best part of 45 minutes of reminiscing and talking, I really appreciate. And we wish all the best with your health, and I think I'm getting a leave pass from home to sneak out and have a beer on Saturday afternoon at Windsor Park, so I look forward to doing that. Thank you, Gordon. I really appreciate you coming in.
It's a pleasure.
Johnny Elwin, I've read the stories, I've heard the legends, and to actually meet a man of your talent and ability and obviously the respect that you're held in local football, to have you here and just take a call from a random stranger and agree to come in to be interviewed is a real privilege, and I thank you for that. Thank you for coming in.
No worries, it's been a pleasure.
And Keasty, we talk footy still quite a bit in your role at St Mary's. For those, and I know you play this down, but for those who don't know, Keasty and Gordon and John, you'll be interested in this. Keasty, only the second man to coach 200 GFL games since 1979, joins Terry Bright on that record, and it will break Terry's record, I think, in round 9, so which is a credit to you as well. So and 4 premierships to your name as well, which is a fairly impressive. How many did you coach, Gordon?
6.
What do you got? 4?
4, yeah. I don't know if I'll catch Gordon, but no, it'd be nice if it happened, but we'll see how we go.
Right. So, as I said, I'm lucky enough to have 3 men here who have wonderful records and been good enough to join us. Gentlemen, thank you, and may North Shore rise again, and may your legends continue to live on at the North Shore Footy Club. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, King.